House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Monday, March 30th. We're going to send over two bills that are on the schedule. House Bill 3017 and House Bill 3070 are going to be rolled over, we hope, tomorrow. And we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2002. I'll speak to Kotek, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today on House Bill 2002, and particularly a thank you to the chair. You have been very gracious in working on the amendment that will be moving forward, hopefully, on this bill. So thank you for the time today. You have my testimony. The Dash 1 amendment is also online. Just so folks understand, there were three bills introduced at the start of session, 2001, 2002, and 2003. The goal was to have House Bill 2002, because it has a broader relating clause, be the omnibus profiling bill for the session. And so the Dash 1 amendment to 2002 incorporates some of the concepts from the other bill, will completely replace 2002, but talks about the definition, talks about the data gathering proposal, and a work group to move forward with enforcement. Broadly, I just wanted to say that this is an extremely important statewide issue. I think this bill gets to the core values of Oregonians: fairness and justice, and frankly, the freedom to be who you are no matter where you are in the state. And I really appreciate you looking into this topic and giving it the time and consideration it deserves. There were a lot of individuals who worked on the Dash 1 amendment, and there are a lot of individuals here today, here in this room, also watching online and in the other hearing room. And I want to thank them for sharing their stories about their personal experiences and their desire to come up with a way to address it in a way that is fair and gets at the difficult topic. The idea of profiling and interactions with law enforcement is a complex topic. It's not an easy one. But it's definitely one we need to take up in a fashion that can solve a real problem out there. I want to thank law enforcement, who's been working with the community advocates to come up with the Dash 1. I want to thank law enforcement in general for the work they do every day to keep our community safe. And one of the goals of this bill is to work in a way that continues to build trust with communities across the state who might not have the level of comfort with law enforcement that they should have. And it's important to build that trust that will help law enforcement do their job as effectively as possible. So this is a bill that is good for the entire state, and it's meant to be a collaboration with communities and with law enforcement. The Dash 1 amendment that you'll see, I just want to briefly talk about it. I believe perhaps co-chair or vice chair Williamson will talk a little bit more in detail. I generally conceptually support the Dash 1, but I do want to bring up just one brief topic. In the Dash 1 amendment, it talks about mere conversation, and that's a legal term that describes an initial interaction with law enforcement. I have a concern about that terminology. I'm not sure what the right answer is, but I just want to make sure that my concern is on the record and it's noted for today's hearing. By excluding mere conversation when we talk about the definition of profiling, we might be broadly exempting a whole lot of interactions that I think, if we do so, will make it very difficult to collect the data that we want to at the state level to understand what is happening out in communities across the state. So I just caution that while we want to support community policing and welfare checks and the types of positive interactions, mere conversation might be too broad in having that be an exemption from the racial profile or the profiling definition that is in the Dash 1 amendment. Because I think our goal is to be able to collect the best data possible. And I just encourage you today, as I know you always do, to listen to the stories of the individuals who are here. Try to think about being in their shoes in the types of stories they're going to share today. And to keep that in mind as we work through the Dash 1 and try to perfect it with all the stakeholders involved, I think we can get there. So thank you, colleagues. And I apologize, I have to run off to another meeting, but I really appreciate the opportunity to start off today's testimony. Thank you.
Representative Williamson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Speaker. I share your concern about that language, and we are working on that part of the bill. And so this committee will actually see a different definition, I believe, through the work group and the folks that we've been working with, than the one that is in the Dash 1. So we are working on the issue and your concern, and we will have some additional language for the committee at a later date. And I am willing to go through the technicalities of the amendment later in the hearing if we need that. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, for the opportunity.
You got just a second?
Oh, yes.
We had a bill the other day with police cameras. And I'm of the opinion, and there, I think probably all four of us have been in police work, that if you have these body cameras, what I'm interested in is the difference what I might see when a police officer approaches a person of color or some other origin, you know, that they notice is different compared to how they treat just another white person, if it's a white officer. So I think a lot is going to be learned about profiling. And if there are bad players in police work, and I can tell you, I think there's about 100 years here at the table. In fact, there's over 100 years. There have been bad players that should have never had a police uniform on.
And Mr. Chair and Representative, I'm very pleased with the work that's being done on body cameras. I also know that, you know, not every department will have them because of costs and other things, but I do think in certain communities it'll be helpful. It really will. So I appreciate you taking up that issue as well.
Thank you.
So thank you, Representative, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Frederick, why don't you come on up too, please?
Who's next for me? It's Peter. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Representative Peter Buckley, representing Ashland and South Jackson County in the legislature. Thank you for your time and consideration. I'm here just to offer my support to the amendment in House Bill 2002. Like the speaker, I'd like to echo my thanks to the many people, including Representative Frederick here with me at the table, who've helped bring the bill forward and move it along. Representative Williamson, the work that you've done as well, much appreciated. I just want to make a few quick points and then leave it to others who want to testify on this bill. These amendments are a starting point to the conversation, just as this bill is a starting point for changing systematic issues. And I'm sure this committee knows very well it's a big issue that affects the lives of many, and we're looking for solutions that tackle the issue, not just redressing old policy that isn't working. We have a moral obligation to do everything we can to ensure equal justice for all in our state, and the legislation we're proposing will help clarify the extent of profiling in Oregon and take the steps needed to eliminate it. The basic principle is this: every Oregonian should feel safe and respected in their community. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Chuck Thompson, State Senator, District 26. I'm here today testifying with Ramon Ramirez because we want to continue our win streak sponsoring bills together. We're 4-for-4, so we want to keep that alive. The reason I'm in favor of House Bill 2002 is that I see profiling as one of our issues of the day, both as a current problem and a rising one, and view this bill as a reasonable solution. My district is very racially diverse, whether it's the inner city culture of Portland or the migrant worker culture of Hood River. I have seen an increasing demand to not hamstring our police officers, but to at least put certain checks in place to keep Oregon in league with proactive steps that other states have taken to address the issue of profiling. Mainly what I want to say is that we aren't asking for anything extreme. I believe independent procedures on profiling under the power of the Criminal Justice Commission isn't some massive step that undermines police officers' ability to serve the public, because from what I've been presented, there is no independent check that currently exists. It has been clear to me that profiling goes on, and when I knock on doors in my district, I hear stories routinely from minorities about times they were treated differently by law enforcement. I believe this is a tension that doesn't even need to happen. I believe all law-abiding Oregonians need to know their officers of the peace are their friends and allies. Thank you.
Thank you.
You want to go, Ramon?
Yeah, I'll go. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the honor of presenting here with my fellow colleague, who's a grower from the Hood River area, Senator Chuck Thompson. Like he says, we've sponsored bills together, and we're on a winning streak, so hopefully we'll make this number 5. For the record, my name is Ramon Ramirez. I'm president of the Oregon Farm Worker Union, PECUN. The PECUN is a union of reforestation workers, nursery workers, and farm workers. We are also Oregon's largest Latino organization in the state. We primarily work in agriculture. We primarily represent rural folks throughout the Northern Willamette Valley. And I'm here to strongly support House Bill 2002. Law enforcement practices of using somebody's race, ethnicity, religion, national origins, sexual orientation, or gender identity to perform a stop, question, or search is completely wrong, and has no there's no way that we could that kind of stuff should exist in our society. When people are unfairly singled out, it presents a big problem. I work primarily with immigrant folks, with immigrant farm workers, and I'll tell you that when there is no trust of a police department because of this kind of practices, and I do believe that that there are the majority of police officers are good people. You know, they're there to perform a public service, but to have people who continue to perform this kind of practice to stop people is really doing the public service. It's completely wrong. Since I work with immigrants, I have recently, about 3 months ago, I had this gentleman from Guatemala who was assaulted on the streets of Woodburn and was robbed and was cut in the face with a knife.
Right.
That individual was so fearful of his past experiences with the police, not necessarily in Woodburn, but his experiences with police engagement, that he didn't call the police. He called me, right? And I had to go out there about 10 o'clock at night and get him and take him to the hospital, take him to the emergency room. And in that process, I learned that there was a complete distrust of police. This happens time and time again. So by having this kind of practice go on, we're doing our community a disservice. I could tell you from my own personal experience that over the past 10 years, I have been stopped more than 30 times by police officers from different law enforcement agencies throughout the state of Oregon, and not once was I given a citation. And I believe that it was racial profiling, because when you get stopped, it's predicated on the fact that you violated, there was a traffic violation had occurred. And in none of the 30 times that I have been stopped was I given a ticket, right? On a couple of occasions, I was actually trying to get out the car to see if my light was going off and on like the officer had indicated, and there was no way, because my car was a new car. It was a 2009 Nissan. There was no way it could have. And when I tried to get out of the car, I was threatened with arrest. So in short, I want to say that profiling is humiliating. It's wrong. I was humiliated on a couple of occasions in front of my kids, and it's got to stop. That's why I'm here to testify that House Bill 2002 is a step in the right direction to bring about accountability and to increase not only awareness among police departments, but also to document, you know, this kind of behavior and eliminate it. Because without documentation, we're not going to be able to eliminate it. That's why I strongly urge that this committee pass House Bill 2002. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. I'm Representative Lou Frederick, House District 43, North and Northeast Portland. Now, most of you have heard me talk about this and related subjects before, and I don't plan on giving up on it. It's a quality of life issue among all groups with a history of assumptions made about individuals' relationship with the law and assumptions made about lawlessness, assumptions based on stereotypes. My experience, obviously, is as a black man, and that experience will be my reference point as I talk about what profiling is and what it means to those who experience it. There are other groups you've heard who get that same kind of attention: Latino, Native Americans, citizens living without houses, sexual minorities. I will speak about my experience because I think it's at least partly generalizable, and because the experience of black men is one that I can speak of with the authority of both firsthand experience and the fact that it's a shared experience for black people, especially black men, pretty much without exception. Now, if I'd been pulled over or otherwise stopped once or twice for reasons I couldn't understand, it might be just a funny story. But that's not how the terms driving while black or walking while black or breathing while black came to be part of the language. And by the way, when I was a reporter, I learned that the Beaverton police had a short radio shorthand that was BIB. You might guess what it meant. It meant black in Beaverton. Not a rumor, This was confirmed by several friends of mine who were on the force at the time. When you get stopped for the 8th time, the 15th time, the 25th time, it isn't funny. And every parent's nightmare is that one of those will turn into mouthing off while black for one of their kids, because then anything can happen. I've been stopped in my own neighborhood multiple times. It's a gentrified neighborhood now. No reason given except to ask maybe if I was lost. Once I had just pulled up in front of my own house, just checking to see if I was lost. Told the officer, no, I wasn't lost. I've lived here since 1977. Like I said, it's a funny story the first time. After that, not so much. I've been stopped to point out that there was a small hole in my taillight, and that one was recent. I've noticed a reduction in the frequency of these encounters as my hair's gotten a little grayer, so there's an upside to that. I had a gun pointed at me as I tried to find out how to comply with conflicting instructions given by a police officer while I was a passenger in a marked Channel 8 news van. How many of you have had the privilege of losing count of the times you've been pulled over or questioned by police? How do you think you would feel about it, say, on the 28th time? Now, I know quite a few officers, and some sometimes have casual conversations with them in the grocery store. Those are conversations that don't involve asking me what I'm doing there or where I've been. And these days, they're usually conversations that involve my role as a legislator. There's no power imbalance or fear involved, because that is a casual conversation. But for kids walking around the neighborhood, kids who may have been stopped many times, there's no such thing as a casual conversation with a police officer. They instantly have to be on their best behavior, and we hope that their parents have taught them what their parents have taught them isn't crowded out by the frustration. Even saying something like, hey, why are you stopping me again, can lead to escalation. The facts of a particular encounter may seem casual, but it's a cumulative effect of being asked where you're going, where you've been, who you are, etc., over and over again that makes it tense. That and the fear. And as I've said before, many black men will tell you that their first thought when they see blue lights in the rearview mirror is, am I going to die today? So here's what profiling is. It's suspicion based on who you are rather than what you've done. It's actions taken on the basis of that suspicion. It's targeting individuals for police intervention at any level based on who those individuals are without indication that they've done anything to draw that attention. It's hearing the description of a suspect as black and stopping there, considering the next black person who comes in sight to be the suspect. Profiling is police attention based on stereotypes. It adds up over time. It degrades the quality of our lives. It needs to stop. Thank you.
Thank you. Please thank your panel. Senator Kelser and Representative Vega Peterson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Gelser. I'm the state senator from Albany and Corvallis, which is Senate District 8. This is the second time I've gotten to sit on a panel with Representative Vega Peterson today. Thank you so much for holding a hearing on this bill. There's not a lot that I can add to the testimony that we've already heard. I wanted to talk a little bit about why it's important that we have this discussion and why this legislation is so important. Profiling is not something that just started yesterday. It's not something that is even always intentional. It is the product of a longstanding history of eroded trust between law enforcement and members of different communities. And that eroded trust goes both ways. No bill can solve racism, xenophobia, transphobia, or any other bias. But what a bill can do is say that we don't want to accept that in our system anymore, and we want to find a way to unpack those kinds of hidden biases so that we can stop the types of experiences that we just heard the prior panel talk about. I wanted to go on the record to share the concern about the phrase mere conversation. I'm glad to know that there is conversation about how to make that right. We do need to make sure that we have the appropriate data. That data will help us better understand how these biases that people may not recognize in themselves and in their work can be unpacked and undone. It's a very important bill. Thank you so much for hearing it.
Thank you, Chair Barker. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jessica Vega Peterson. I'm the state representative in House District 47, which is in East Portland. I'm going to, I know you have a lot of people to hear from, and for the sake of my voice, I'm going to be very brief today. I did want to just talk about a couple of things. I know that Representative Williamson says she is going to walk through some of the Dash 1 amendments in detail later, which is great. I just wanted to talk to a couple of issues in the Dash 1 amendment. First of all, the Dash 1 amendments take the privacy of individuals very seriously. That was a big push in creating the Dash 1 amendments. And having a separate entity to file the complaints is a big part of the amendment that should be highlighted. I think that makes the bill much stronger. And I also wanted to make sure that it was on the record that both the name of the complainant and the officer's name will be exempt from public records request to ensure the safety of everyone involved. The other piece that I wanted to say was Senator Thompson had talked about his district is very diverse. My district is also very diverse. And in fact, I think if you look at the map of Oregon, you would be surprised to see just how many districts are very diverse. A county in Representative Bent's district was one of the first to have a large majority Hispanic population in the history of Oregon, one of the biggest majorities because of the makeup of Oregon. When you look at how the demographics are changing in Oregon over the next 10, 15, 20, 25 years, we're having a larger and larger percentage of minorities moving towards a minority-majority population. We won't get there as soon in Oregon as other parts of the country, but it is happening. And I think that is a very important thing to remember when we look at what racial profiling does. I know this bill just goes beyond racial profiling, but the fact that you can use just one identifying characteristic of a person to pull them over, and the fact that that population is growing and growing in our in our state, I think it sets up a very troubling situation for the direction that we're going in, the relationships that our population has with law enforcement. And I know that's not the intent of both our law enforcement officers or anybody in this building. And I think that this is a great opportunity to address it so that Oregon won't be one of only 8 states that doesn't have a prohibition on profiling. So I urge your support of this bill. I'm happy to work with the committee and make it an even stronger bill. I appreciate your time and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Senator Gelser, knowing Corvallis as you do, as well as I do, and having worked with those, John Sassaman and others before him, would you characterize their agency as being one that, if they have an incident involving profiling, they deal with it swiftly and resolve the issue?
Chair Barker, Representative Olson, I know this has been an issue of discussion. I think that certainly is the intent. I think if you were to talk to some of the individuals in the community that I've heard from, there's still work that remains to be done. The intention, I believe, is good, and I think this bill will help us get there by moving forward with those good intentions.
Okay, just a follow-up on that. Have you ever gone down and visited with John down there to see what their policy is dealing with this?
Not in the last couple of months, no.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Michael Salvaggio and Kevin Campbell, please. We have a lot of people that want to speak today, and I've been pretty meeting with the other legislators, but I will ask you to keep it short so that everybody gets a chance to talk today. Thank you.
Please. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, and I appreciate the opportunity to get up in front of the committee and speak to House Bill 2002. I want to begin by thanking the legislators that have sponsored this bill and the proponents of the bill. I've had a number of really meaningful conversations where we've gone through provisions and we've worked on this bill in good faith, and I feel like it's headed in the right direction. And I know the Dash 1 amendment was just released and have not had a chance to look at the details of it, but I am looking forward to doing that. I also want to mention that I see a lot of folks are here from the Center for Intercultural Organizing and other organizations, and I just want to thank you for being here, because the stories you'll share are important stories. Even though I represent a police organization and represent the chiefs of police, what you have to say and your willingness to come to this place and make your voice known is very important. And so I want to thank you for that. I see my friend Joanne Hardesty then, when I worked with her back in 1997 on House Bill 2433, that's a long time ago. She was then Representative Joanne Bowman We work together on similar issues, and it's good to see you again. And so I want to just begin by saying this. Biased policing is not professional policing. It just isn't. And our association stands by that term, and as Representative Buckley said, our purpose is equal justice for all. We continue to work to become a more and more progressive policing environment in Oregon. Our training, frankly, is critical to that. I think we can be very proud of the Public Safety Academy we have. Those are investments, when the legislature makes them, that are very profitable. They pay off. I do think we can be proud of the fact that we are rigorous in the way we do background checks to make sure that the people that are entering the policing profession should be there. We are training them in a training academy that is well regarded around the United States. And we decertify. We take the badge and gun away from officers to the tune of about 100 per year on average for the past decade, when they should no longer serve as police officers. Mm-hmm. We take that very seriously. Well, it's not a surprise to you that the world of the police officer and the job they do is increasingly complex. In some ways, it's hard to believe that people want to do this work anymore. It's hard work. As you know, police officers are called when people are not getting along. That's the nature of their work. It's conflict. And so whether they're dealing with a domestic violence disturbance or they're dealing with any number of encounters with people that are struggling with mental illness and they're in crisis, the officers go into those situations. They have to handle them properly every time in an environment that has increasing scrutiny. We don't always get it right, but our goal is to become a more and more professional policing culture. And so I believe we can be proud of that culture right now, and we should be proud of the officers that serve and protect. And I believe that this bill has the intent to identify information and data that will help us train better and identify problems where they exist. And Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the chance to speak to this bill. We'll be reviewing the amendments, and then we'll provide any feedback as soon as we can so that the committee can move forward with your work. Thank you so much for the time.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Michael Salvaggio with the Oregon Coalition of Police and Sheriffs. I want to echo what my colleague said about thanking the people that have worked on this, the stakeholders, the legislators, and especially the legislative staff also. Mm-hmm. Coalition of Police and Sheriffs believes that every Oregonian deserves to feel safe and well served by their local law enforcement officers. And to that end, the coalition has been working with these other stakeholders on this issue in order to craft a bill that both reinforces the public's trust and accountability in their public safety officers and also maintains officers' abilities to engage in community policing. For example, if an officer encounters an individual experiencing homelessness, we want that officer to feel able to reach out to that person on that basis and help connect that individual to needed services. That's just one example of issues that we're working with to make sure that we don't lose the importance of things like community policing and the details of the bill. It's important to us that we move the issue generally forward, though, and I want to be very, very clear about that, because building trust between police officers and the communities that they serve means better public safety outcomes for everybody. And we've had good conversations with sponsors, with stakeholders. I'm very heartened at the direction that we're headed. I have not had a chance to thoroughly look over the Dash 1 amendments, but upon my first read, I'll say that I very much like the direction that they're going in, and based on what I know about everyone's conceptual goals here, legislators, stakeholders, my colleagues on this side of the dais, I believe that we're going to get to a place where we can stand behind this policy and support this at the end of the day.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Next, we're going to call up panels: Mary Beth Williams, Midge Purcell, James Manning, and Casey Jama, please. Go in any order you wish. Just remember to identify yourself for the record, please.
I'll leap right in then. Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Mitch Purcell, and I'm Director of Advocacy and Public Policy for the Urban League of Portland. Thank you for allowing me to give testimony today. Profiling remains a troubling national problem. Ferguson, Cleveland, Philadelphia are just among the latest law enforcement agencies to be told that they are not meeting the standards to equally protect and serve all of its citizens. African Americans, our organization is an organization that served the African American community for 70 years, and our community has been subject to racial profiling from the earliest days of our state. I won't repeat the experience that Representative Frederick eloquently presented before this panel, except to say that profiling knows no barriers of age or accomplishments, and we feel that that this is tragic. Today, one of the most distressing aspects of routine profiling is that young people expect to be stopped. They are resigned to being searched. They are told to empty their backpacks. They are followed in shops. They are pulled over without just cause. What do you imagine that this does to their self-esteem and the sense that they are valued citizens with a contribution to make to our society and to our state? In Portland, we live in a city that is 6.4% black, 78.8% white, yet 23% of those are subject to deadly force, 15% pulled over for traffic stops, and 25% of those stopped as pedestrians are black Oregonians. And the percentage of African American search is three times the rate of their white counterparts. This is despite the fact that black Oregonians are no more likely to have drugs or contraband or illegal weapons than their white counterparts. I will truncate some of my testimony in the interest of time, but to say that profiling practices fosters distrust of law enforcement and disengagement among communities that tend to be disproportionately affected by crime. Unfortunately, it is the very reason why those communities are least likely to work with law enforcement. So it is time that we work together to put an end to profiling. We are one of only eight states that don't have a standard definition of profiling. This bill is part of a package that defines profiling and ensures that good practice is put in place to end profiling and that that practice is standard across the state. It sets up a complaint system that protects the officer and the complainant and sets up a system of accountability that will build trust in our law enforcement across the state. Every Oregonian should feel safe and respected. Unfortunately, in our society, bias is a common social condition. Having public written policies and procedures banning profiling based on stereotypes, robust training programs to prevent profiling, and investigation and action on complaints will help restore confidence in law enforcement and help our help make our communities safer for everyone. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Okay.
Chair Barker, Vice Chairs Williamson and Olson and committee members. My name is James Manning from Eugene, Oregon. Before I begin my testimony, I'll be very brief. I am a former police officer, a former corrections officer, and I retired from the Army after 24 years of service. Currently, I am a police commissioner with the Eugene Police Department, and we worked on similar language as this, which has been adopted by the Eugene Police Department. But today I come to you and I speak as chair of the Oregon Commission of Black Affairs, OCBA, in support of Bill 2002. OCBA, along with the Commissions on Asian and Island Pacific Affairs, Asian Hispanic Affairs, and Commission for Women, have jointly submitted written testimony to you in support of HB 2002. OCBA, as a member of the National Coalition of States of African American Commissions, which consists of Illinois, New Mexico, Kansas, Iowa, Connecticut, Washington State, Minnesota, and Pennsylvania, have submitted similar written language as contained in HB 2002 to the Federal Department of Justice for implementation consideration at the national level. Unlike the Ferguson, Missouri Police Department and similar departments that practice profiling, HB 2002 would provide a measure of transparency and accountability in support of all professional law enforcement agencies and activities. There is no downside to this bill. I'm proud of you, our state senators, our state legislators, who continue to lead our nation in common sense because it's the right thing to do, legislations for all Oregonians. In closing, I ask that you support HB 2002 because it not only makes sense, but it's the right thing to do for all Oregonians. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Mary Beth Williams. I am the legislative aide for Representative Buckley. I came to work on this as an American Indian lawyer who was very interested in civil rights, and my job here today is merely to answer any questions you might have about the statutory construction of the bill. I've worked on it since the beginning of the session, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you very much, panel, for your testimony today. Joanne Hardesty, Jeannie Frazzini, Kimberly Dixon, and Linda Roman, please. And the next panel up is going to be Kimberly McCullough, Eduardo Corona, Ramon Ramirez already testified, Eric Richardson. So in case you're in the overflow room, you'll know to come up. Please go ahead and testify in any order. Introduce yourself for the record.
Sure. Good afternoon, Chair Barker and committee members. Thank you for holding a public hearing on House Bill 2002. I am Joanne Hardesty, and I am here to support the passage of House Bill 2002. No, son, this isn't the birds and bees talk. This is about you coming home alive. We know you're just a child, but to some people, you're an adult. So if a policeman stops you for any reason, just do what he says. Don't pull out your phone to call us, even if he yells at you, even if he pulls his gun and you get scared. Do not run. Just put your hands in the air. Now imagine having that conversation with your 10-year-old son. This hurtful conversation happens in households of people of color on a regular basis, and it is why House Bill 2002 is so vital to changing police practices so they respect all our rights to be safe in our local communities. The history of policing in the United States has been fear-based. Since 9/11, fear of others has dominated public debate about what it means to be American. Fear of others is reflected in our policing practices throughout the United States, and yes, even Oregon. The U.S. and Oregon Constitution affords most Americans an ability to freely congregate, worship, protest, and seek redress for unconstitutional practices and policies. In actual practice, law enforcement personnel receive exemptions. While the law states mere conversations doesn't obligate community members to interact with law enforcement, the experiences of African-American men and women, immigrants, and others in Oregon have been significantly different. We know not to turn our backs on police officers and walk away, regardless of our rights to do so. Law enforcement has been trained to engage African-American recent immigrants and houseless community members with suspicion of criminality until they prove they are not involved in such behavior. Our legacy of racial bias in policing has led to reduced crime solving due to trauma communities have experienced, an absence of any trauma-informed approach to reconciliation and healing. Why would any young person of color call the police to help them solve crimes when these interactions leave them with an image of law enforcement as a heavily armed, occupying force that polices their neighborhood with racial bias? In Portland, the gang enforcement team travels in a pack of at least 10 officers. When stopping a pedestrian or driver, one officer approaches the target, nine or more surround them within seconds. As a community member watching this one early Saturday afternoon, I parked, took pictures, and spoke to each of the individuals who were separately stopped and searched. This day, there were 12 officers. Two were visiting Oregon law enforcement from Eugene, by the way, observing gang enforcement in action. Long story short, one African-American man gave another 50 cents to go into the convenience store to buy a smoke. The police purported a hand-to-hand exchange was evidence of a drug encounter. African-American men in our community are learning not to shake hands with one another. Speaking with the officers after they completed this stop, I asked whether they realized they themselves were operating as a gang. I challenged the officer in charge to consider the kind of message they sent into our community. The response was, police are safer when they roll out in this manner. There was little acknowledgement of the harm done, even though it extended to all community members who stopped and witnessed this public humiliation for no good reason or outcome. Yet we currently don't track information on these encounters or use it to inform training that police receive in the academy or in service. House Bill 2002 provides some clarity around what profiling means and how it plays out in various communities. The requirement to collect data on all police stops is key. Our current voluntary system means the most egregious and repressive actions aren't even tracked unless they lead to arrests. How many people were stopped, questioned, searched for every documented arrest? Voluntary compliance has, over the last decade, led many communities to lose trust in law enforcement, especially in historically black neighborhoods. For redress, we expect you to grant the Oregon Attorney General's authority to investigate agencies and or individuals when a pattern of unconstitutional practices is displayed. Ultimately, House Bill 2002 is legislation meant to advance fairness. All community members deserve to relate with public servants who are problem solvers, who work with community to address community-based concerns. Tracking information on disparities may be enough to change behavior if sanctions are built in. Tracking and reporting this information to the legislature is one key to rebuilding trust between law enforcement and the communities they are sworn to protect and serve. House Bill 2002 is a good government initiative. It should be moved to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. In closing, I'm often told there are mostly good men and women working an already difficult law enforcement job, and regulatory legislation adds too many additional reporting requirements to the job. I have two responses to that. If good men and women stand by and watch their colleagues over-police some populations but not others, how good can they really be? And two, reporting back to the public you serve that you are complying with the U.S. Constitution regardless of color, religion, sexual identity, or housing status is appropriate. It is actually intrinsic to any commitment to protect and serve. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker and members of the committee. Thanks for the opportunity to testify before you today on the importance of House Bill 2002. My name is Gina Frazzini. I'm the Executive Director of Basic Rights Oregon. We work to ensure that all lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Oregonians truly experience equality. We represent tens of thousands of LGBTQ and allied folks around the state, and I'm honored to be here to reflect our voices in this critical conversation. Profiling by law enforcement is an issue of deep resonance and historical concern to LGBTQ communities. On June 28th of 1969, New York City police officers raided the Stonewall Inn, a gathering place for transgender women of color, for gay men, and for homeless youth primarily. This was not the first raid on an LGBTQ establishment, but it did spark our modern movement, and it's why we celebrate Pride every June. Today, I come before you at a time that is bittersweet for LGBT communities across Oregon. This is a time when we now have the freedom to marry, and we have very important and critical non-discrimination laws that protect folks, ideally, but many of our communities are still living Stonewall. And our collective work at this critical moment is reflected in the policy of House Bill 2002, and that is the aim to ensure lived equality, that it's not just the promise of our laws, but it's the experience in the day-to-day lives of all of our communities that are met with dignity, respect, fairness, and freedom. To that point, I was asked to share the story of one of our volunteers, Rihanna Quigley. Rihanna is a transgender woman of color. She rides transit from Gresham to her job in Northeast Portland on a regular basis. And during her commute, she is often approached by police officers from both cities as she's sitting at transit stops waiting for her bus and for her train. She's peppered with questions that clearly suggest she is a sex worker and are based on stereotypes and suspicion based only on who she is, not anything related to what she has done. This takes a significant emotional toll, and it's not a unique story. A report released this month by the Williams Institute at UCLA School of Law documents ongoing and pervasive discrimination and harassment by law enforcement against the LGBTQ community, especially among LGBTQ people of color and transgender individuals. Nearly half of transgender respondents in a national survey reported being uncomfortable seeking police assistance, and nearly a quarter reported being harassed by law enforcement because of bias. It's clear from these reports and from what we hear within our own community here in Oregon that law enforcement is simply not well trained in working with LGBTQ communities and very specifically with transgender communities and members of our community. These kinds of interactions, as others have spoke to and Joanne just before me, continue to erode trust in law enforcement and create a volatile and unsafe environment. It won't improve until we take concrete steps. This bill is an important first step, allowing us to collect data so we have a clear picture of the problems occurring and in what communities. It will help identify the real issues so that we can give officers the training they need to be successful in their jobs to protect and serve all Oregonians. And finally, the bill provides Oregonians with a path to seek justice. So on behalf of Basic Rights Oregon, I urge you to pass House Bill 2002 to concretely address profiling in Oregon. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Linda Roman. I'm the health policy coordinator with the Oregon Latino Health Coalition. We are a statewide health advocacy organization that works to inform and shape health policy. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony. As the fabric of Oregon continues to change, we know that communities of color and immigrant communities are three times more likely to be stopped by police. The stress, intimidation, and emotional harm profiling may cause is a problem that we can collectively work and have a remedy by taking the first step to support House Bill 2002. Profiling happens in every part of the state, in my district and even in your district, with different communities. Profiling is consistent over policing and interactions based on suspicion and not facts. Personally, my mother was profiled when the police questioned the validity of her driver's license. The police explained to her that it is a common practice for people to share the driver's license with a family member. In my mother's broken English, she explained that this was, in fact, her driver's license. She took the knowledge test and the driver's test. She paid for the exam. She studied hard to earn the privilege to have a driver's license. The comment that the police officer made would be very different if she were not a Latina immigrant. It would not be the same if the interaction was not based on the suspicion about my mother's immigration status. This is one example of how profiling may occur. And this scenario isn't alone. Although the interaction may appear harmless, it was a very tense and stressful interaction. Because of interactions like this, we support having a coordinated state policy in place for people to report cases of profiling. We support the amendment that takes the privacy of the individual seriously by ensuring that both the names of the complainant and the officer's names will be exempt from the public record laws to ensure safety for everyone. We believe this is a common sense solution, as currently in Oregon, there is no statute that defines and prohibits profiling. As a state, we have to continue to make strides to ensure that we can protect and ensure safe and informed interactions with law enforcement. We recommend the committee to adopt the amendments for House Bill 2002. Thank you very much for your time and commitment to these communities.
Thank you very much. Ms. Dixon.
Hello, Chair Barker. Can you hear me okay? Sorry. Committee. Very appreciative of this time to be with you. I'm going to start with my story with...
Can you identify yourself for the record, please?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah. I'm Kimberly Dixon. Yeah, I'm going to begin with my story back in the 90s when I had the pleasure of having my younger brother come live with me when he was 17. And he needed some help to get himself moving along, got him through his GED. But his experience and what I saw was him regularly being patted down outside my home, literally walking less than 100 feet, and he's immediately pulled over while walking and patted down with no explanation. Further, let's bring it to current status. Last week on Friday, I noticed a couple of officers walking very quickly by my office building, so I stepped outside and I asked them, anything going on? Is everything okay? Oh, yeah, we're just walking. But I look up the street and I see your car is parked the wrong way and it's crooked. That's not just walking. And moments later, I see you patting down a young man of color. And then a few moments later, you're laughing and talking with him. That same evening, I pull up in my driveway. I'm talking on my phone. And my sons pull up and they ask me, Mom, what's going on? What's going on? You tell me. Well, there's officers in the front of the house. I walk down my driveway, sure enough, on my car, three officers, man of color, red hat, pulled over. So I come down the driveway and I decide to film. I'm curious, what's going on? I clearly see the man being asked to get out of his vehicle. I see him patted down. He steps over to the side. Clearly, at some point, he's either been told or requested they'd like to search his vehicle. I observe his body language. He's not particularly happy about it. The officers complete the search, and then I walk forward, and I introduce myself. And I said, I was just curious. Did you give him the notice that he has the right to say no to a search? Oh, yeah. Of course we did. He knows that already. Really? Because earlier that day, I just had officers tell me they were just on for a walk. My sons, I have a new driver. I am the mother of 10 children this side of the Mississippi, 8 of which are boys. I have 3 young ones that are at home now. They're 17, 16, and 14. My 16-year-old is a driver. I now have a conversation with them on a regular basis that looks like this. Tell me what you do when you're stopped by the police. Notice I didn't say if you're stopped. Because my young men are men of color. And you get stopped because you have a different pigmentation or the fact that you do have pigmentation. And I'm here to represent and let you know this is real life. I was never trained by my parents, what should I do? Should I be stopped by the police? It was never a conversation. We had discussions about how to park the car. We had discussions about parallel parking. We had discussions about speed limits. I have never had a discussion with my parents about what I should do should I be stopped by the police. My sons don't trust the police, even though we have family members that are law enforcement. We have a good friend who's an assistant chief of police, but they don't trust because of their experience and what they see every day. 2 of my sons go to Roosevelt. I'm sure you're very well aware of a recent occurrence with a football player from Roosevelt. That is their reality. My reality as a mother is I need to know every day as I worry about, are my sons coming home to me? Do you wonder about that regarding any child that you know in your life? Do you ever wonder if that child is going to come home? Whole, complete, only to have to worry about maybe how are your SAT scores? Our conversation looks very different. And that should not be our standard. Not in this state, not in this nation. So I hope that you will support the passing of this bill so that we can continue to systemically change what is not okay with a system that my children should trust and believe in, that I should be able to trust and believe in. I don't want to get the phone call. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I take what you're saying very, very seriously, but maybe just a break for a second. In 2001, I came into the legislature and sat down the first time, and there was a lady by the name of Joanne Bowman who happened to be sitting, sitting next to me.
Yes.
And I'm the freshman legislator on judiciary. She says, well, it's expected that you will pull my chair out each day when I come. So for a week, I was pulling her chair out, just like she said. And Mr. Williams, the chair, said, what are you doing? I said, well, she told me I was supposed to pull her chair out every day, so I'm doing it. You know? But it's good to see you again.
Likewise.
And everybody, I think, understands what we're talking about here.
Thank you so much.
Mr. Chair, Joanne, let's point it towards you because you've been here. You get this and everything. And I appreciate you sharing your testimony. Appreciate especially the incident with Gett. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to kind of get a handle on this. Do you know whether or not any of those guys filed a personnel complaint with Portland Police Department? It was the Bureau, wasn't it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, neither of those gentlemen filed a complaint because, unfortunately, in the city of Portland, we have a organization called the Independent Police Review Division that isn't independent, doesn't really review the police, and the public has absolutely no confidence that filing a complaint will lead to any kind of sanctions.
Well, okay. I guess I was going to follow up with that, but I think you've just answered that question. If you'd ever reviewed what PBB's policy is regarding this, but I think you've just addressed that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, the Independent Police Review Division releases an annual report that's available online, and what they will tell you is they throw out 72% of all the complaints that come in. They do not investigate complaints of racial bias. They do not investigate complaints filed by houseless persons. So there are many people that they just write off before they even consider doing an investigation. That's why House Bill 2002 is so important, because then we have statewide data as compared to just what people are willing to collect.
Just one other follow-up. This is a great opportunity for me. I am just curious because, you know, obviously when you were in the legislature, you didn't represent just the Portland. I mean, you were after representing the entire state.
That's correct.
Have you received any other have you heard of other incidents similar across the state?
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, a recently released report by Portland Cop Watch showed that from 2000 to 2014, there were over 22 deaths around the state at the hands of law enforcement officers. I don't remember which legislative session, it may have been just after I left, there was a bill developed that said the Attorney General was supposed to collect data on police, on incidents of police shootings, and that was turned over to the Human Resource Department for some reason, so that data was never collected. And I know that the Attorney General is looking to figure out what process she will use to start collecting and then analyzing that data.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, panel. Kimberly McCullough, Eduardo Corona, Casey Jama, and Eric Richardson, please.
And Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Kimberly McCullough, and I'm here on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon in support of House Bill 2002. I'm going to try to keep my comments brief since there's so many people here and just focus in on a few issues. I have not actually seen the official Dash 1 amendment, but I did see a version that got distributed, and I have a few comments that I'd like to provide you with to hopefully guide the conversation going forward. The first is that I noticed that the definition of racial profiling is somewhat narrowed, and we do have some concerns about that, and particularly in regards to the fact that research shows that that bias happens not just at the time when someone is initially stopped, but then when decisions are made subsequent to that, and in particularly in regards to discretionary stops, so that or discretionary searches. So. By that, I mean consent searches and probable cause searches. And so I think it's important that whatever definition we include covers those areas as well, because there's actually higher rates of profiling in those incidences than in the initial stop. The other thing is I notice in the amendment that I see a public records exception for the personally identifying information of law enforcement officers that are subject to complaints. And obviously we're very supportive of transparency, and so I have some concerns about that information being hidden and not subject to disclosure. And I notice it's also it's in ORS 192-502, so it's not the subject to the public interest exception. The other thing I'm a bit concerned about is I don't see the Attorney General powers that are in the original bill, and in particular the power to do investigation into systematic patterns of profiling. And I think this is particularly important because we need data, and we need data analysis. There's a lack of that across the state. There's only a few places where we actually do know what's going on. And that's also particularly important because of the fact that the bias that we're talking about is not necessarily overt. People don't necessarily realize that they're profiling when they're doing it. A lot of this comes from unconscious bias and implicit bias. And so it's important that we be able to identify the pattern so that we can then try to figure out how to address that, because it's not just as simple as saying, don't profile. It's getting at something a little bit deeper and that requires more attention. So that's particularly important. And I think that those were actually the three main things that I wanted to bring up, and just say that ACLU would be happy to be part of this ongoing conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Representative Berger and members of the committee, thank you very much for letting me speak. Sorry about
that. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Eduardo Corona, and I'm a social business owner, a micro business, and I have a lot of stories about my neighbors. They tell me about the stops because of a tail light not working, and at the end the tail light is working. It's just an excuse to stop the people. And I was driving an old, very old car, and nothing happened to me until I started to make a little better, and I get a used but nicer car. And I was stopped twice in a week for two different law enforcement agencies in Washington County. And the last stop, the officer told me, hey, too many problems with this car, when I explained why this is the second stop, and there's no reason for that. And then in a community meeting with the sheriff department, I asked what they're doing for to train the officers about the racial profiling, and the officer answered to me, "There is no racial profiling in Washington County." is for 15 years there is no incident on racial profiling in Washington County. Obviously, there is some racial profiling in Washington County, but that answer is telling me that maybe it's unconscious bias. Maybe the officers they don't realize that something is happening in the that make them stop the people because of the skin color or the appearance of the people. So I think that bringing or making this law to make happen, it's gonna bring to the attention of the law enforcement agencies that this is happening, and telling to the officers that this is happening, and watch themselves, the law enforcement and the persons that belongs to the law enforcement agencies, before doing a stop. If something is happening, if this is a racial profiling stop, watch themselves for this kind of attitude. I think this law can help out to bring better training for these law enforcement agencies. All we are taxpayers, and this kind of trainings will bring to everybody the high quality service that we deserve as a taxpayers in the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, first of all, my name is Eric Richardson. I'm here today representing the Eugene Springfield NAACP, but I'm also here as a parent. I've got three students, one who graduated from the University of Oregon recently and two who are at the University of Oregon, that I am always concerned about. And what I do, I'm a volunteer, but I do for our youth and for the future. I come today in support of House Bill 2002. As an organization, the NAACP has been on the front lines insisting on equal treatment under the law against the odds for 105 years. And it is a sad fact that we are still dealing with the idea of discrimination coming from sanctioned officials in the 21st century. But I can personally recount several reported incidents from the NAACP in Eugene Springfield within the last year, who attest to mistreatment or profiling due to race or class or just gruffy appearance. The recent DOJ findings in Ferguson should be a clear call to right our course as a nation, and we in Oregon can help with this effort. The NAACP's mission is to achieve equality of rights and eliminate race prejudice among the citizens of the United States, and to remove all barriers of racial discrimination through democratic processes. Hence, we're here today. Eliminating discriminatory behavior everywhere should be a mission of all people, taking our cue from our national constitution that states that all men are created equal. Today, the issue of profiling is front and center in the public consciousness, and it is with great hope that we at the NAACP view House Bill 2002, because it shows a willingness to build trust and professionalism for and in all our state's law enforcement agencies. This legislation will go a long way in lifting the weight of ineffective policing off the back of everyday people. In the state of Oregon, statistics show that African Americans are inexplicably three times more likely to be contacted by law enforcement than the general population. This erodes the potential of an important part of our population through intimidation and humiliation. In order to move beyond the worn-out cycle of mistrust and objectification that has plagued communities of colors and other marginalized groups for generations, I believe House Bill 2002 will begin to help our police force to grow and operate in a modern, professional way while allowing Oregon to join the other 42 states nationwide which have already implemented statewide profiling regulations. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Please.
Good afternoon, members, Chair Parker and members of the committee. My name is Casey Chama. I am the Executive Director of the Center for Intercultural Organizing. I think you do have my testimony, so I'm not going to just go ahead and read, but I'm going to make a couple comments just for the sake of time.
Thank you, sir.
I came to this country about 15 years ago from a war-torn country of Somalia. As a young man growing up in Somalia, one thing was clear: never trust law enforcement. They will get away from them as far as you can for your sake, of your safety and your family's safety. I came to this country because I do believe this country is the country of laws, where people are protected by the law and treated equally. Unfortunately, it doesn't take me too long to find out that's not the case. For the last 15 years, I personally experienced my own racial profiling, being stopped by the law enforcement agencies, and the last time it happened to me was 2 years ago. I know that we are very conscious people, and I think most of the law enforcement agencies do their job well, and they try to protect the people, all of people. What we are talking about today is a systematic problem, and a problem, a system that's really inherently biased when it comes to people of color, immigrant refugees, LGBTQ community, and religious community members. We want to make sure that we all hold accountable. I think you have a job to do that. I think this issue, as all the panelists described here, said that this issue is a national issue, and we need to be solving as a state. I think I want to conclude and finally connect to what Eduardo Corona said. After that discussion when he had the Washington County Law Enforcement Agency, I called Sheriff Garrett. He came to my office. He's a wonderful man. We have a discussion. We talk to each other. I ask him, we're having a complaint from your department. What can we do together to solve this issue? Sheriff Garrett immediately called me a couple months later, and he informed me that he's going to be collecting data. That's a one conscious person, leader, community member. But we need to make this statewide. We want to make sure that we have a system that's across the state, unified, and deals with these issues of profiling. In conclusion, I want to tell you a story about my little daughter, who is 4 years old. But after the death of Michael Brown, her and her twin brother and I went to a bank. We get in, did our banking. As we were leaving and we turned around, she saw a guard with a uniform and a gun. She looked at me with stern eyes and told me, I'm going to tell that policeman to stop killing people. She is 4 years old. I wish she would have a different saying that I wish she wanted to talk to that officer. It makes me sad as 21st century, a four-year-old child to associate a law enforcement agency or someone who's the uniform, someone who's going to kill people. That's not the society we want to live in. We want to be creating a society that's based on justice and those children can live safe and be part of the productive of the community. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony today. Thank you, panel. Caleb Hayes, Melissa Unger, Will Fuller, and Reagan Gray, please.
For the record, my name is Reagan Gray with the Oregon Health Equity Alliance, and I'd like to express our support for House Bill 2002. OHAE represents a collective effort of over 37 member organizations working together to make Oregon a more equitable place for all. Our coalition believes that every Oregonian should have an equal chance to achieve their full potential. When communities are being targeted and stopped more often, it can cause things such as high blood pressure, anxiety, and unfortunately physical harm if things are escalated. We feel that this is a statewide issue and it needs a statewide approach. Oregon needs a statewide system to document the incidences, track data, and ensure law enforcement accountability. When we allow profiling, we are categorizing people as dangerous because of their identity. OHAE urges your full support of House Bill 2002. Thank you.
Chair Barker, committee members, my name is Will Fuller. I live in Vice Chair Williamson's District 36. And you have my testimony. I sent it in electronically, so I will summarize just a couple of pieces of it. We're talking here about contact between people, which violates the social contract, which is the basis of good law enforcement. When a person of color, a person who looks different, gets profiled, that undermines their respect for the law, and it undermines the professionalism and the respect for people, which is the hallmark of good law enforcement. There are two groups of people which I think have a vital stake in the kind of oversight and good data collection that's behind this bill. First, there's the law enforcement officers themselves who put their lives on the line in tough, dangerous, frightening situations day after day. They need the respect of the citizens and need the protection of the system of laws to make a good job work. The second is people like myself who do not face the negative consequences of profiling. We depend on a society where we can walk the streets safely, where we are not overwhelmed by the bitterness and frustration of people who have been treated badly or feel they have been treated badly, to give our lives in the social contract. That's the real part of law enforcement. Police are not here to arrest people or to put them in dangerous situations. They're here to enforce that social contract. I'll tell you what I mean. I looked up a statistics from the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission. This is not in my testimony, but it's fascinating. The rate of crime statistics per 100,000 people in my home county of Multnomah County in 2012, there were per 100,000 people 11,580.6 reported offenses. That's, if you average it up, it's more 50,000 with every real offenses, but per 100,000. Of those, 30% resulted in arrests. Of those reported offenses, 4% resulted in convictions. Clearly, the front line of law and order is not in the police arrests, not in the convictions, but in the day-to-day interactions between our law enforcement officers and citizens. So for protection of the whole society, for protection of people like myself, and for protection of people who do the job, the dirty job, of being the last line of resort when the social contract fails, we need this sort of oversight and this sort of data collection to make sure that we're doing the best job possible. Now, I know, police get profiled too. Some people see the uniform, they see the badge, they see the enemy. When officers get profiled this way, citizen respect for the law and law officer respect for the citizen both suffer. And when two people profile each other as a threat, as an enemy, and one has the authority to use deadly force, the outcome can be tragic. And we are here to take the steps to avoid such tragedies. Thank you, and I'd be willing to answer questions if you have them.
Thank you. Melissa, go ahead.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today. My name is Melissa Unger, and I'm the political director for SEIU Local 503. And along with SEIU Local 49, we represent 65,000 workers in the state of Oregon. And we support this bill as a part of the Fair Shot for All coalition that is working to make sure that everyone has an equal opportunity to get ahead. Our members live, and we represent 65,000 people, and they live in every part of the state. They come from different backgrounds, and this bill is important to them. We believe that it's an important first step in the conversation regarding profiling. We also believe that police officers work hard to keep our community safe every day, and in jobs where they put their lives on the line. But having said that, we think we all come to work with a bias, and that impacts us all in our jobs, and that includes police officers. By setting clear definitions, training, and data collection, we can help identify areas where bias is impacting a community. And that's what these amendments do. We support where the amendments are headed. We want to create a clear definition of profiling. We hope the definition can be really just simple and clear. Second, we like that there's a third-party data collector. They'll be able to look at trends and identify problems if there are trends, and make sure that the appropriate person hears about the complaints and protects the identity of the officer. Finally, the work group is very important so that we can make sure that if trends and problems of profiling do arise, that there's a community, there's a plan in place to solve it. Our members are diverse in age, sexuality, gender, and race, and we believe that this is an important bill that acknowledges that there's work to be done to make sure that all communities feel equally protected by law enforcement. Oregonians need these steps to create communities where everyone feels that they have the same chance at getting ahead. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Barker and members of the committee, my name is Caleb Hayes. I'm here on behalf of the National Association of Social Workers Oregon Chapter, the largest and most well-recognized professional association for social workers in the world, representing 1,700 members approximately right here in Oregon. The primary mission of the social work profession is to enhance the human well-being and help meet the basic human needs of all people, with particular attention to the needs and empowerment of people who are vulnerable, oppressed, and living in poverty. And with specific regard to profiling, we believe that providing education and training to law enforcement agencies on how to discontinue the use of racial profiling is the right way to go. And in that vein, we thank the Center for Intercultural Organizing, as well as SEIU, Basic Rights Oregon, and a number of other groups I'm probably forgetting, no offense to them, for taking leadership on this issue and working with law enforcement to come to a bill that we think is a good one and we're proud to support. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, panel. Appreciate your testimony today. Okay, so the last group I have signed up is Salome Chimuku, Delfina Andrade, and Nicole Brown. I thought I saw Salome.
She's right there.
Go ahead and just identify yourself for the record.
Sure. I'll be introducing.
Okay, thank you. And you, why don't you pull your mic over? So
oh, yeah, that works. Yeah, that makes more sense. Okay.
Buenas tardes. Me llamo Delfina Andrade. Soy originalmente de México. Vivía en Arizona. Llegué hace 5 años y vivo en Beaverton. Soy madre de 5 niños y promotora de salud. Y muy activa en mi comunidad. Estoy aquí para pedirles que voten sí para la ley 2002 y contarles por qué es tan importante para mí.
Good afternoon. My name is Delfina Andrade. I am originally from Mexico. I lived in Arizona before, and I've been living in Beaverton for 5 years. I am a mother of 5, a community health worker, and very active in my community. I'm here to ask you to vote yes on House Bill 2002 and tell you why it is so important for me.
Cuando nos mudamos a Beaverton, empecé a trabajar limpiando casas. Llevé 2 años limpiando un daycare. Un día 24 de diciembre del 2012, terminé de limpiar la casa y el dueño me llamó para darme una propina. Me agarró y me quiso abusar sexualmente. Como pude, me solté y salí corriendo a mi coche y me fui a mi casa.
When I moved to Beaverton, I began to work cleaning houses. I had been cleaning a daycare for 2 years, and one day on Christmas Eve, the 24th of December of 2012, I'd finished cleaning the house, and the owner called me over to give me a tip, at which point he pulled me in, grabbed me, and tried to abuse me sexually. As I could, I got out and ran to my car and went home.
Estuve muy asustada y una persona que era ex policía me convenció que fuera a hacer la denuncia al departamento de sheriff de Washington County. Hicimos una cita, llevé un líder de la comunidad para apoyarme, pero no la dejaron entrar.
I was very scared, and so a person that I knew that used to be a police officer convinced me that I should go to report the incident at the Washington County Sheriff's Department. We made an appointment, and I brought a community leader to support me, but she was not allowed to enter.
Cuando le expliqué lo que pasó, me empezaron a preguntar si tienes licencia y sobre mi estatus migratorio. También dijeron, ¿estás segura si quieres seguir con la demanda? Porque se ve que te tienes ocupas el dinero y te van a quitar el trabajo.
And so when I explained to them what happened, they began to ask me about my driver's license, if I had a driver's license, and questions about my immigration status. And then they also told me, oh, are you sure you want to make this report? Because you might lose your work, and it looks like you need the money.
Desde ese momento me hicieron saber el doblemente malo, haciendo sentir doblemente malo, insistí que tomaran el reporte. También incluyó el abuso que había a los niños del daycare.
From that moment on, I just felt really horrible, and it felt doubly bad. But I insisted that they took the report, and I also included some abuse that I had seen of the kids that had happened to the kids in the daycare.
Cuando pedí una copia del reporte, vi que no incluyeron la parte del abuso sexual. Sentí miedo que ya no podía confiar en la policía, que es lo mismo que venía huyendo de Arizona.
When I asked for a copy of the report, I saw that they did not include the part about the sexual abuse. I felt very scared and that I could no longer trust the police, and it was basically the same thing that I had tried to escape from in Arizona.
Después contacté a Maritza López de Sexo SAC Recursos Center. Ella me ayudó a escribir una carta al sheriff Packard para dejarle saber lo que me había pasado.
So after that, I contacted Marisa Lopez from the Sexual Assault Resource Center, and she helped me to write a letter to Sheriff Pat Garrett to let him know what had happened.
Después de entregar la carta, nos reunimos con un asistente del sheriff, el mismo lugar donde me trataron mal. Él pidió perdón, pero realmente no pasó nada, hasta que bromeó que para esa propina no valía la pena lo que te pasó.
So after we turned into the letter, we got together with an assistant of the sheriff, but I had to go to the same place where they had treated me so badly. And he said sorry, but really nothing happened, and he even joked that it was a very little tip for that to have happened to me.
No había un lugar fuera del mismo departamento para denunciar los abusos del departamento.
There was no place outside of the same department that happened for me to go to report what had happened in the department itself.
Cuando pasó el incidente con mi jefe, ya no sentí mucha confianza con el policía, pero después de ir sentí peor.
When the incident happened with my boss, I already didn't feel that I could trust the police, but after I went to them, I just felt worse.
Me trataron mal por ser latina, inmigrante, y no tomaron mi caso en serio, aunque fui víctima. Necesitamos un proceso independiente para reportar la discriminación y el maltrato en vez de tener que ir al mismo departamento.
I believe they treated me poorly because I was Latina and that because I was an immigrant, and they did not take my case seriously even though I was a victim. We need a process that's independent to be able to report this discrimination and bad treatment instead of having to go to the same department.
También es importante que no puedan reportar de una manera anónima para sentir protegida en su demanda.
It's also important that one can go and make a report anonymously so that they can feel protected and safe doing so.
Muchas gracias por escuchar mi historia y por experiencia. Les pido que voten sí para la ley 2002. Gracias.
Thank you very much for taking the time to hear my story. And for these reasons and these experiences, I urge you to please vote yes on House Bill 2002. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, thank you for giving me this opportunity to testify in front of you. My name is Salome Chimuku. I'm the Public Policy Director at the Center for Intercultural Organizing, and we are the proponents of this bill and legislation. Sorry, I'm a bit out of breath. We have another bill and another hearing exactly at this time right now, so excuse the shortness of breath. So I am up here to mostly answer any questions that you may have that haven't been answered yet, but I do want to offer a bit of perspective on the situation. So as you heard from other community groups and leaders and such, the need for an independent process in terms of an independent place to file one's complaints being very important to the community members, as well as the opportunity to remain anonymous if they so choose to do so, especially in places where we have a smaller law enforcement entity, it's best, and those folks there may want to remain anonymous so they're not further isolated from the rest of the community as filing a report. As we do know, in other places and other agencies, there's a process to file a complaint. There's a process in which you go and have your complaints filed against either an independent employee or the agency itself, in which you can remain anonymous if you choose to do so. And we'd like to see this reflected in law enforcement. It's been my pleasure to work on this legislation, especially in long conversations with members who represent law enforcement, as well as boots on the ground, having day-to-day interactions with the troopers who are in this building, as well as police officers just randomly on the street and asking their opinion. One thing I do like to mention that I found very interesting in doing this work is that, in particular, we had our lobby day on February 25th, in which, unfortunately, one of our groups felt that they had been profiled by one of the troopers in the building. And upon this process, I had to ask myself if I really wanted to go through the process of filing a complaint and figuring out who I needed to file it with. This led to a long amount of research that was outside of this particular legislation itself, and found myself in a very time-consuming space to try to figure out how I best point this group forward in terms of filing this complaint. To this point right now, it seems like we're zeroing in on who's the right person to give this complaint to, and we found that it would most likely at this point be Heidi in the governor's office, which was very surprising to us that it would be that office in particular that would be the ones that handle these cases. But I think one thing I did find by talking to some of the troopers and talking to some of the boots on the ground was the want really for stability. And stability in the sense that if they were to be transferred to different areas, different departments, that the process in particular with profiling would remain the same. And this came from them experiencing that, especially those who have done transfers to other parts of Oregon, that one municipality handles it a certain way, but when they go somewhere else, it's handled in a completely different way. And some of which at the time they don't agree with how the municipality handles it, and other times they do. And so that was something that was a big takeaway from them, is wanting something that was uniform, that applied when they went to different areas of the state, so that way they felt like they could better serve the needs of those marginalized communities. But I'll leave it at that and see if you have any questions that you're burning to ask and desire, and leave it there.
Are there any questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. I don't have anybody else signed up. Was there anybody else wanted to testify in this bill today before we have one more bill we need to work?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Salome for all her hard work on the Dash 1 amendments. We're not ready to move them today. We've got a couple more issues to hammer out, but we're getting there. We're going to get you an amendment that's ready to go, and it's not this one, but this one's close. So okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing on House Bill 2002. And open a work session on House Bill 2382.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2382 comes to this committee from the Attorney General. We had a public hearing on this bill on March 17th. The bill itself extends the aid and assist statute from criminal trials to probation violation hearings as well. We had two amendments that were the product of a work group, the Dash 1 and the Dash 2s. The work group included people from OJD, the Department of Justice, district attorneys, police, sheriff, OCDLA, the health authority and disability rights, and the Dash 1 contained a clerical error. The Dash 2 amendments continues the concept of having probationers be eligible for restoration if they're unable to aid and assist, but specifically it eliminates the possibility that they can be committed to the state hospital unless they are serving a probationary sentence that resulted from a downward departure from a prison sentence or optional prison. We have the fiscal paperwork in. There's no revenue impact. There is a fiscal impact, and so it would need to go to Ways and Means.
Okay. And that we have the amendments in already? Or?
No, we would need to adopt the amendments. Okay. So.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendments into House Bill 2382.
Representative Williamson moves the dash two amendments into House Bill 2382. Any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2382 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation into the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay. Representative Williamson moves House Bill 2382 as amended to the floor with the due pass onto Ways and Means with a prior reference. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Good job today, committee. We are adjourned. We are adjourned. Committee.